overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
One of the greatest practices that any one of us can do in life is the simple practice of stopping. Stop the narrative. Stop the running around. Have you noticed in the Western world we're always running around, doing, doing, doing? And the simple act of stopping can be difficult. And so I hear Ram Dass in my heart saying, "Be here now." The ultimate reality is that all we ever have is present moment. In a different reality, we think we have the past and we have the future and we can live in this narrative on a timeline. But when you radically stop, you realize that time dissolves and all there is now, one breath at a time. And then the past, when it should arise within consciousness, it arises in present moment awareness, and you see the past in a sacred sort of way. So the first act is to stop, and the second act of this simple, profound spiritual practice is then to go deep. Once you stop the doing, the efforting, the thinking, the struggling, whatever that is keeping you in this active mode. When this radical stopping comes, you touch a place within yourself that is still. And I hear the admonition from the Bible that says, "Be still and know that I am God." And so what if in the profound simplicity of the ultimate reality is that through a simple act of stopping, all you're doing, all you're fidgeting, all you're efforting, all you're thinking, all you're questioning, in that radical act of stopping and then entering into present moment to be here now, well, then we can go deeply into what is. With a radical acceptance of what is. It's not about striving for something that we want, because wanting begets wanting. So when we stop wanting, and we move into present moment, we discover what is right there in this holy instant. Some beloved friends just walked in the door I haven't seen in a long time, and my heart stopped, and I felt this love that never went anywhere. And it shows us that we may be apart from form, but in essence, nothing ever leaves us. Beloved Paul Rowland left the planet yesterday, many years ago. That sounds crazy, but yesterday was the anniversary of his death, and his beloved wife Barbara reminded me of that. And in that holy instant, I smiled because I felt Paul, who's still here, whose love is still here. And through the act of stopping and going deeply, we learn that love was never born and love never dies. And then we begin to have a different experience of life. That life isn't something that happens to us, that life is something that happens through us. And we get to experience it intimately, empirically, directly, not as a concept. Even the idea of the kingdom of heaven, that so many of us think is outside of us. But the radical truth is, if you don't experience the kingdom of heaven right now, in this present moment, you're not going to experience it when you let go of your body. So through stopping and looking within, you discover something that's always there. Thich Nhat Hanh, the beloved teacher, coined this calligraphy over my head. And it says, I have arrived, I am home, which is a spiritual practice of stopping, arriving in the present moment, and then to experience this vibration of home, that you're already home, a place of nurturing, a place of wholeness, a place of clarity. And in this place called home, there's no anxiety, bless you. Anxiety will arise, but then when you surrender back into this peaceful place, this stillness, this silence, a strange sort of smile forms on your lips. I don't need to strive for something in the future. I don't need to mourn over something that happened in the past. They all dissolve into the sacred now, and we witness what is arising in this holy instant of now. We look out at the world and we see turmoil, we see change, we see violence, we see all kinds of things that upset us. And if we go into the storm on the outside, we're no good to the storm. What we get to do is to go to that center place, that still place within, and then invite the awareness that is required by us so that we might meet the struggles of life. Not dealing at the level of effect, but dealing at the level of cause. So are we cause to our suffering, or are we cause to our freedom? And then we smile to that question. The beloved Thich Nhat Hanh, he talks about store consciousness, and store consciousness is your subconscious mind. And he says, and in this store consciousness, there are all these seeds that have been planted by your ancestors, by your teachers, by your parents. And if you were raised in a fundamentalist teaching as I was in, there are a lot of disturbing thoughts and seeds that were planted, like you were born in sin. Or if you're gay, you're an abomination in God's eyes. Now, does David Leonard choose to water those seeds of abomination and sin as my origin? Or is David going to choose to water the seed that says, you are an expression of the one life, here to reveal this imprisoned splendor of your own true nature, that you are an eternal soul that was never born and will never die? Could we know ourselves as that vastness of being? And then we smile because we say, you hear this voice that says, yes, yes. And then you begin to feel into the truth of who you are. I would contend that each of us knew who we were when we were a child, when we had that original innocence, when we could sit on a golf course and hold a buttercup in your hand and fall into the buttercup and said, oh my God, I'm a buttercup. We didn't need to get high on a drug to feel that. We were actually having a direct experience of oneness. And then you'd look around and you'd see the butterfly and you'd say, oh my God, I'm the butterfly. And then the old tree would call its attention to you and you would say, the tree lives in me and I live in the tree. But I'm a little boy and I better not talk like this because they'll think I'm crazy. And so you keep your truth to yourself as you try to fit into an idea that the world has of you. And you try to conform and you try to be something that you're not until you realize that you cannot be what others tell you to be, that you have to be who you are. And then something in the soul begins to smile. There's an original nature that begins to awaken. This is what they call the Buddha consciousness. That consciousness that is awake, that is loving, the Christ consciousness. And then you realize there's a pattern throughout creation, that there is the seed of divinity that is planted within all creation, not just humanity. And when we water that seed of our potential, of our possibility, of our wholeness, of the peace and the love and the joy and the freedom inherent within the soul, well, that begins to then grow within the body of our experience and ultimately flower and bear fruit as our life experience. What does it require? It requires that we become conscious co-creators with the universe. Am I consciously growing limited thoughts and ideas? Am I identifying with problems and struggles and worry and judgments? Because if I am, I am watering those seeds. But if I can, through a radical shift, by turning from the outer to the inner, I can begin to water the seeds of trust. It's Dr. Ernest Holmes that says, he who does not trust does not know God. And so are we trusting in life? Sometimes it seems like, hell no. Look what's going on all around. And yet then when you go deeper, you say, life has always had tribulation. There's always been a growth experience going on this planet as long as I can remember. And so could we begin to water the seeds of a resurrection, a spiritual resurrection, where humanity awakens to its compassion, to a sense of equanimity, which means we're all in this together. We're included. We're not separate. We're not higher than or lesser than. It's all the one life, and it's our life. And then you hear Jesus would say, if you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me, because he understood that it's all us, that we're all connected in this life of the one, expressing in multiplicity. And as Thich Nhat Hanh would say, we humans are made out of animal, vegetable, and mineral. And so he says, when you know that you are all of that, how could you then abuse the animals on the planet? They are our own self. And our earth with its trees and its beautiful green growth is our vegetable self, because we are made out of earth. And we are made out of the minerals, and we are made out of the air, and we are made out of the water, and we are made out of the fire. It is all us. And then something shifts. You begin to see through different eyes. No longer through the eyes of the egoic self, where it's all about me and my decisions and choices and my history. That begins to dissolve. And you begin to see through the eyes of oneness. Wheresoever I look, I see the face of God. It's because the divine presence is looking through your eyes. And what did you do? You just stopped. You just stopped all your narrative, all your whatever, all your efforting. Because there is no effort in oneness. How much effort is there to breathe? Breath is another name for spirit. And so one of the greatest, most profound practices we can do is breathe. To just stop and take an inhalation. And then when we reach the apex of that inhalation, we give an exhale with a smile and a sigh. Hildegard of Bingen says, sigh for the divine. Because she recognized that the simple act of an exhalation can be the ultimate release that you need to set you free. And then you realize that you're already free, but you were bound because you were holding on to something. And so we rest in that awareness that we're already free. We witness the silence. When you become familiar with silence as your friend, just like death, when you befriend death as a friend, not as an enemy that we have to run away from, then the very thing that we've been resisting becomes the doorway for liberation. And so we open to the very thing that seems to be the obstacle in our life. And we look at it with different eyes. And when we recognize what is happening in our lives, and we all have stuff happening, and we allow it without resisting it, without making it the enemy, then we begin to integrate the very thing that we've been struggling with, we've been suffering with. And in that integration of our anxiety, our fear, our worry, our doubt, or whatever that might be going on in you, well, then we experience a radical nurturing. We come home to love. And this month, we're talking about the gifts of love. And to know love not as a commodity that we have, that we share, that we can lose or gain. It's nothing like that. Love is something so much greater. It's what we are. Wow, we've moved out of content into context. We've moved out of the clouds into the sky. We've moved out of the drop of water in the ocean to the very ocean itself. And so we become the context in which all content arises. And when the context is divine love, well, then when life throws hurdles at us that seem challenging, we invite divine love to the rescue. I'm reflecting on Ukraine a lot this week, and I feel divine love is empowering a whole community to stand up for freedom and for what in their hearts they know to be right. And the whole world sees it and feels it. And we're in this together. And so we begin to know that we are each other. I am you, you are me, we are one. And in this unity, we will live in harmony. And peace will come when we realize that we are one. So we smile. We breathe in again. Breathing in present moment. And as we exhale, breathe out wonderful moment. Do that one more time. Breathe in present moment. And exhale, wonderful moment. One last time. Breathe in present moment. Open your eyes. Eyes are the window to the soul. Look around you and breathe out and smile and say yes. I love seeing you out there, the one life reflected so beautifully. That doesn't say that life's going to be easy, you know? What life is kind of as difficult as we make it. And I used to make it so, so difficult. I can remember being a young copyright manager at a music publishing company in New York City. Who qualified me for that one? And it was a foreign language, and I struggled with it, and I struggled with it, and I was trying to be perfect because I thought there's a right way to do everything. And Linda Tadaldi from the Bronx, this was in the 70s when they wore those high platform heels. She had bleached blonde hair and blue eyeshadow. She was from the Bronx. She was Italian, and she married a Guinea, which is an Irishman, and he was a cop and a butcher. So here she was, this lady from the Bronx who was so free spirit as, and I'm this struggling little perfectionist. And the teacher comes in strange forms. She said to me, David, goof on it. Goof on it. You take everything so seriously. You have to be perfect. Goof on it. And you know, she was right. So could we goof on this crazy life that we take so seriously sometimes? It's the otter consciousness. The Tia says there's no organized play. And when you begin to play at this thing called life, well, then it becomes kind of fun. I saw this video on YouTube, and someone says, I can't stop watching this. And there was a dog sitting in the chair next to his master. It's a big old dog. And they're watching a football team, and he's screaming at the team. And the dog's going like this. And before you know it, the dog falls down on his lap. And he's got it totally entrained to his human. He falls off the sofa in a crazy reverie. And you begin to see how we contagion each other. We really do contagion each other. So wouldn't you rather be contagioned with someone who's aligned to a peaceful place than someone who's fighting the battles of the world, who says this is a dog-eat-dog world and we got to fight and struggle? Because then that's what you're going to get out of life, because you're watering the seeds of the battle. But what if you get off the battlefield? You're in a relationship with your partner. Trey and I, we've been together for 45 years. This week he had his 74th birthday. And he said to me, I don't want anything. I said, what do you want for your birthday? I don't want anything. I have everything. If anything, I want you to throw 10 things away. Go to your closet and throw 10 things away. He always wants me to throw my stuff away, my books away. It's interesting how that works. So realizing that that's his pain body expressing, I went to the closet where the box of old photographs were from the past. And you know, 46 years, you got a lot of photographs. Most of them are in black and white. And so I'm going through this box of things, and I found this little card that said, Stoddart baby born February 22nd, 1948. 13 inches long, 7.5 pounds. And it was his original little thing of his birth, stuck in a box. It was probably his mother. And then I found all these baby pictures, black and white, sepia, from 74, 3 years ago. So I took the little card and I made a little book with the pictures and I put a bow, stuck it in a bag. Then I thought, what else is there? He had written a letter to an artist named Leo Brooks, who's now in the Metropolitan Museum of Art. We met him at the Trailing U. Before I became a minister, the summer before, he was a resident artist there. We paid $37 a night. This is how cheap it is in Maine. And that gave you breakfast and dinner. Tells you how old I am. And he would paint, and he was like this guru to me, and he had all his art all over the world. And so I wanted his paintings, and so Trey would write him letters, and he was going to buy me a painting when I became the minister here at the center. And I filed all those letters to you, and he explained the soul of the artist and how the artist creates. So I took these old letters from this artist, and I wrapped them in another bow, and I put it in his bag. You forget that 40-some years, you've got to read these to you. They'll blow you away. It was the soul of an artist in expression. I says, well, there's got to be something else to put in his bag. You know, it's his birthday. There was an old candle in the closet that hadn't been used in 20 years. It was still new. You know, you plan to give it to a friend. I'll put the candle in his basket. And then in going through the hundreds of thousands of pictures, there was one of him and me on my, I think it was my ordination here at the center, because I was all dressed up in a suit. I even had a little flower in my lapel, and he was wearing a tie and a coat, which he never wears. And we're out at some fancy restaurant, and someone's taking a picture of us, and he's got his arm around me. And so I framed that, and that was in his basket. So instead of getting 10 things of mine thrown out, he got tears in his eyes as he saw his birth thing, he saw Leo's thing, and he saw the painting of him, or the picture of him and me, just because the heart was leading the way. And you stop and you meet the moment with what the moment requires. So what if we could do that with everything in life? We could ask our heart. And Marie Perez said she's learning to live from the wisdom of her heart, because the heart will guide you. And that's what we're speaking about this month of February. I always speak about my favorite subject, which is love. And what are those gifts of love? And I like what Damien said this morning. I don't want answers. In fact, we shouldn't seek answers. We should stay in the question. So what if we could live in the question, what is love? And it says in Science of Mind, you have to deny before you can affirm. You first have to deny what love isn't. Love isn't attachment. That's not love. Love does not possess or bind or own or declare. Rumi says, what you think of lover but subtle degrees of domination and servitude, that's not love. He says, true love is fully formed like the moonlight in the window. Well, that's vague as it could be. So could we open to something that's that vague? On Valentine's Day, this is what Jack Kornfield said about love, and I really loved it. He said, we must look at ourselves over and over again in order to learn how to love. You have to know, you have to learn it from within. No one can teach it to you. He says, to discover what has kept our hearts closed. If your heart is closed, you can't love. Is it that simple, David? Yeah, it's kind of that simple. Could you open your heart? I was in the house the other day, and I saw a bug lying on its back, one of those prehistoric-looking things with the legs, and I thought, oh, he's died on the floor. And then I went to pick him up, and he started wiggling his legs, and he was alive. Well, he was huge, and he was probably something that most of you would have stepped on. But ever since this oneness thing, I said, you know, I just need to find you a home outside. So I scooped him up. And to discover what has kept our hearts closed, and then what it means to allow our hearts to open. What it means to allow our hearts to open. In the Sufi tradition, they have one simple practice. Don't you love it when it's simple? And they say, hammer your head into your heart. That's kind of a violent act. I say, surrender your head into your heart. So then your thoughts become loving thoughts. They become compassionate thoughts. They become kind thoughts. They become joyful thoughts. They become thoughts of equanimity. The first week of this month, I talked about Thich Nhat Hanh's little book called The Teachings on Love. And he talked about the four immeasurable minds, the four faces of love. And I've been living with it throughout this month, and they're becoming more and more intimate. The first face of love is when you're gentle and you're kind to anyone. And you know, we're so interconnected with this equanimity. That's the third one. The second one is have compassion. And then the last one is to just be joyful. And so I began to play with these things on Thursday. We took the pug in to have his yearly shots, his ears cleaned out. He had ear mites and his glands squeezed. You know, he was kind of a mess. And so we took him in at 7 in the morning, and they said, you pick him up at 1 in the afternoon. Humphrey does not like the vet. The moment you pull up to the vet's, he starts to shake like a leaf. And Trey's carrying him in there, and he's having one of his apoplectic shaking fits. And he's going to be there for 4 to 5 hours. So the moment we dropped him off, I couldn't stop feeling his shaking. I felt that was the equanimity. I said, honey, I can feel that he's not having a good time at the beauty parlor because he does not like to go. And so around noon, I said, let's call and see if we could rescue him. He was so happy to see us come. Now, if I can empathize with a little one-eyed pug, imagine what that empathic heart does when you look at something like Ukraine, what's going on in the world. And the beauty there is to not put the wall up. The heart needs to stay open in order for us to feel this interconnectedness. So it starts with just being kind. The heart begins to flower, the gift of kindness, the gift of gentleness. And you know where gentleness has to start? It has to start with yourself, because we're so hard on ourselves. So we start with being gentle with ourselves as we go through this metamorphosis and transformation. And you know what that transformation means? We have to die to who we used to be, and we have to give birth to this new sense of self, which is the resurrection, which is the meaning. True nature wants to arise out of the egoic nature. And that's going to require some growth, some loss, some letting go, and some opening too. And so this journey is an ongoing thing about what is this thing called love? This funny thing called love. Why has it made a fool of me? How can I understand its mystery? You know, it is truly a mystery. So this wonderful mystical book called The Gifts of Love is written by Joel Goldsmith, who was a Unity minister in New York City. He would speak at Alice Tully Hall. He had a big, big audience. He's very famous. And I pulled his book out, Gifts on Love, and it's very verbose, very Jesus-oriented. He says, the master teacher said to love God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. That's the one that knows no other. And then love your neighbor as yourself. And he says, these are the master's instructions. Could we follow them and make them personal to us? It's not about Jesus. And so here's what he says about love. Love is not a sentimental attachment to anyone. Love is a law. Love is a mode of conduct. Love is an attitude. He said, love does not come to us. Rather, love is within ourselves all along, Marie Perez. She found it right there in her heart. So many of us want to make it a commodity that we find it. We're looking for love in all the wrong places. I think there was a song called that. You're trying to find it out here, but if you haven't found it in here, you're not going to find it out here. So he says, love is within ourselves, and we must open out a way in order for it to flow through us. We are an inlet and an outlet for divine revelation, for an awakened consciousness, for love, for peace. So could we open to that? He says, love is something that we let flow out from us, just as we open a way for truth to flow out from us. Now, I love the idea of truth. The Greek word for truth is that which unhides itself. So what if the truth was there all along, but we weren't in touch with the truth? We were in touch with the lies. I mean, we were raised with the lies. You know, I was a religious little boy, and finally I realized they lied to us. They told us we were born in sin, that some were going to be cursed to a place called hell. Hell doesn't exist. It's a state of mind. And so when I realized I was programmed incorrectly, could I let go of that false programming and then have the sleuth-like discovery of what it was this really all about? This divine love would never abandon us or forsake us. In fact, it took up residence within us. That's what he goes on to say here. Love is something that we let flow out from us just as we open to truth. And he says, and if we ourselves, I mean, we have to be careful that we do not get the idea that we of ourselves are loving. He says, every person has the seed of their divinity at the center of their being, Marie Perez. It's right there within you, every one of us. And he says, God has so loved mankind that he placed himself in the midst of life. That it's right there at the core of everything. Wow, it doesn't get any more intimate than that, does it? Thich Nhat Hanh talks about intimacy, and I love listening to a Buddhist monk talk about intimacy, and he says, the first level of intimacy is physical intimacy. He says, many people confuse sex with intimacy. And I'm listening up to the monk, celibate monk, 90 years old, and he says, sex is not love. He says, sex without love is true. I mean, sex without love is not love. So could we find the intimacy and have a physical sense? So he's talking about the Eros field of love. But then he moved to the second level of love. And he says, and that's the love at the emotional level, where we're connected in the heart, where we feel we can share our joys and our concerns and our passions and that's delicious. But he says the highest form of intimacy is spiritual intimacy, where we meet in that field, where there aren't two, but there's one. And so when he says a spiritual love, I think what you two have is a spiritual love. And isn't that nice? Because in a spiritual love, you're there to expand your partner, not to bind them and contract them and tell them who you want them to be, but literally to set them free, to discover the mystery. And so that's what he's saying. God so loved mankind that he placed himself within us, and he placed the individual expression of his love at the center of us, and he named the center I Am. Remember when Moses asked God, who am I speaking to? And he says, I am. So he's basically saying the I Am is at the core of our being. He named himself I Am. And every time we use the word I that comes out of our consciousness, we should realize that we are declaring the presence of God is there. So are you saying I am miserable? You're making it the law unto your experience. Are you saying I am this divine presence unfolding and revealing itself in life as peace and joy and possibility? I am that. I am the very presence. You know, there's a saying in Sanskrit that says, Ta Tvam Asi, thou art that. The Atman and the Brahman are one. The soul within is at one with this power without. The drop in the ocean is at one with the universe. The love that we experience from within is the same thing as the divine love. And then you begin to realize that we're part of something so much bigger. And Dr. Ernest Holmes says, divine love brings together and maintains together those who belong together. Divine love brought that relationship together. And then you realize, well, divine love's been doing it all along. And then you stand back. I and myself can do nothing. I just open to the mystery of this law of attraction that will draw to you everything that is yours by right of consciousness. There are no accidents. And so when we work on ourselves, that's how we attract that which is ours by right of consciousness into our field. So Ernest Holmes, Science of Mind, says all is love and all is law. And he says, let the love lead the way and let the law make the way possible. Now we're talking about spiritual law. Spiritual law says it's done unto you according to your belief. That was Jesus's big message, you know. So what are you believing? Are you believing that life sucks? Well, then the law will make that your reality. Or are you believing that there is hope for humanity to awaken to its sense of oneness through the compassionate heart, because the heart knows oneness, whereas the head might be duplicitous and talk about right and wrong and my way and their way. But this thing knows only oneness. It has this equanimity. It has this compassion. It has an inherent joy, and it's gentle and it's kind. My beloved neighbor, he rescues fallen squirrels out of their trees. I remember we had a squirrel infestation in the attic, and they were up, and they'd been there forever. They found a way, and they'd make a hole, and they'd be nesting, and you'd hear them over your head at night. And so I called these exterminators out, and he put a little trap there. And he says, you need to get yourself a gun and shoot them squirrels out of the tree. And I says, I'm not the kind of guy that's going to shoot the squirrels out. Then he says, the problem is you got these big trees that are over your house, and they're climbing from the trees over your house into your house. So you need to cut those trees down. And I says, you know, you're talking to the wrong guy here. But you know what happened? He put those traps out there, and the squirrels, everyone, left the house, and nary a one was caught in the trap. They all took it upon, you don't need to live here anymore. And so I felt good about the squirrels in that moment, because they're part of the oneness too. I want to close with one of my favorite testimonies, and that's from Albert Einstein. And in this book of the compilation of the great teachers on love. And Albert Einstein, you know, he's the father of quantum physics, E equals MC squared. You could say he's the father of the nuclear bomb. But this was a man who was a pacifist and who recognizes there was something that science really is the doorway to spirit. In fact, quantum mechanics basically says that perception determines reality, that it's all caught up in perception. How are you seeing things? Are you seeing things through the eyes of oneness or through in the eyes of judgment and separation? And so Albert Einstein, before he died, he wrote a letter to his daughter, Liesel, and it was given to her. You talk about giving someone an inheritance. He gave her this letter. It was given to her on his death. And this was what he was trying to leave to her from his heart. It's what a father would leave his daughter. And this is what he said to her. He says, there's an extremely powerful force that so far science has not found a formal explanation to. It is a force that includes and governs all other forces in the universe and is even behind any phenomenon operating in this universe, and it's not yet been identified by us scientists. And then he says to Lisa, this universal force is love. And he put it in all capital letters. Huh. When scientists look for the unified theory in the universe, they forget the most powerful unseen force. He says, love is light. Remember, E equals MC squared is all about the power of light. Well, he says, this light is love. And the Sufis say, when we incarnate, we come with light, we come with love, two invisible things that are our true nature. And when we leave, you can see the light in Michael's eyes. Just look at him. When we leave this plane of action, we take the light with us, but we leave the love behind. And that's why those that we love are still here. We're bi-spiritual, if you will. We're light and we're love. So Einstein's saying that love is light, and that enlightens those who give and receive it. We become enlightened when we give and receive light and love. Then you get to find out how to do that. You do that with a friend. You do that when you listen to someone who needs to be heard. I see you. I hear you. A young lady came to our revealing service, and she's very shy, and she says, I come here to be seen. I just want you to see me. And so then I said, let's all chant her name to let her know that we... So what if that's true for all of us? Am I not your Lord? Yes, we witness you. So Einstein continues, love is power because it multiplies the best that we have and allows humanity to be extinguished in this blind selfishness. We can see that happening on the planet right now. Love will extinguish that. He says, love unfolds through us and reveals itself as us. Now, isn't that kind of fun to experience? You're like a flower that's blooming. And then love is your fragrance. Huh. My garden, I have signs all over it from philosophers, and one is by Emerson, and it says, the earth laughs in flowers. And so when I roam through the garden and the jonquils and the crocus and the hyacinths are coming up, I feel like God is laughing at me, is smiling at me. And, you know, that's kind of crazy how I am. He says, love is God and God is love. For love we live and for love we die. Einstein. So he wants to change his legacy. If instead, dear Liesl, if E equals MC squared, we accept that the energy to heal the world can be obtained through love, love multiplied by the speed of light squared, LC squared, love times the speed of light squared. Anyway, I'm playing with this idea. We arrive at the conclusion that love is the most powerful force there is because love has no limits. And after the failure of humanity and the use and control of those other forces, like nuclear weapons, and God knows, other forces in the universe that have turned against us, it is now urgent that we nourish ourselves with another kind of energy. He's recognizing that we have to have an evolution in consciousness, away from creating weapons of mass destruction to a weapon of world healing through divine love. I think that's what's happening with Ukraine on the planet. People are standing up and saying, no. The people in Ukraine are demanding their freedom, fighting for their country. Tia said, I would give me a gun and I'll go over and fight with them. Because there's something they care about. They're fighting for something. If we want our species to survive, there's that existential imperative. And you know it's serious right now. If we don't, we're doomed to perish on this planet. Environmentally, they're saying it. And look at it politically. If we are to find meaning in life, and if we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits it, and I would say that includes penguins and butterflies and trees, they're all sentient, they all have consciousness. It's not just us humans that we're trying to save. We're trying to save all these beautiful species that are a part of this divine love. Watch Richard Attenborough, boy. If we want to save the world and every sentient being that inhabits it, love is the one and only answer. Love is the one and only answer. Well, then take that to heart. Are you an instrument of love? How are you in your service? Are you serving the love? Are you letting this, and what is it to you? Play with it. It's not that intimate thing that you want to attach to somebody. Get away from the romantic love. In the Course in Miracles, the only no-no is do not have a special love. That means that you put all the love into one basket and you fail to realize that it's all part of the one life. So he says this, every sentient being that inhabits it, love is the one and only answer. So perhaps we are not yet ready to make a bomb of love. A bomb of love. A device powerful enough to entirely destroy the hate, the selfishness, and the greed that devastate our planet. Listening to Thich Nhat Hanh, you know, the goal in the whole Buddhist practice is nirvana. And he says, Nirvana is not a state of bliss and harmony. Nirvana is where the clarity of truth burns away the hatred, the greed, the avarice, the possessiveness, all that. It burns that away because love does not attach. Love does not possess. Love does not expect. Love allows. Love unfolds. Love reveals. So, however, each individual carries within themselves a small but powerful generator of love. And if you choose to accept this mission, no, I'm just kidding. Each individual carries within themselves a small but powerful generator of love whose energy is waiting to be released. And when we learn to give and receive this universal energy, because it has to go both ways, dear Liesl, he's talking to his daughter, well, we will have affirmed that love conquers all, and love is able to transcend everything and anything, because love is the quintessence of life itself. We had our last class on Wednesday, and the projects were wonderful. I mean, they get exceptional every single time. We have a new class starting up. There's a sign-up sheet in March. We're going to do The Art of Living by Thich Nhat Hanh. But I think one of my favorites of the class was my beloved Raoul, because he resurrected a Joni Mitchell song, and he sang it with his guitar. I've looked at life from both sides now. It's about seeing. We used to look through the eyes of the ego, which wanted to attach and possess and discern and judge. I've looked at life from both sides now, from up and down, and still somehow it's life's illusions, I recall. We get trapped in those illusions. I really don't know life at all. And then Raoul said, we're here to move into that I don't know place. We thought we had all the answers, but we don't have. And then he says, I looked at clouds, thinking, I don't know clouds. I don't know love. I don't know life. And in that, something begins to awaken up. And that's the question. What is this love? What is this life? You know, Thich Nhat Hanh loves to use the metaphor. He says, you look in the cloud. You don't see a cloud. You see the sun, you see the rain, you see all the non-cloud elements. And he says, and if you see me as the cloud and my cloud disappears, he says, don't grieve me as the cloud. I'll come down as the rain and say, I'm still here. Maybe that's why he's haunting me at 3 a.m. He's saying, I'm still here. He says, there is no being and no non-being. There is no birth and death. This is the one life, and it continues eternally. Boy, it's a whole different way of looking at things, isn't it? Einstein's saying the same thing. His last paragraph, I deeply regret not having been able to express, most men can't, in my heart to you, my beloved daughter, which has quietly beaten in all of my life. Maybe it's not too late to apologize, but as time is relative, isn't that kind of a joke? As time is relative, coming from Einstein, I need to tell you that I love you and I thank you, and I have reached the ultimate answer. My beloved daughter, ours is the work of love. Your beloved father, Albert Einstein. Ours is the work of love. So, beloved Raoul, who doesn't know life, love, or clouds, will you head to the magic bell, the mindfulness bell? The mindfulness bell is a symbol. It's an instrument of stopping, again, and then going within. And you know, it's so strange. The truth is so painfully simple. All we need to do is our efforting, and then it's freely given, whatever that is. My beloved Marie Perez has been struggling with all kinds of physical challenges, and she's learned empirically that the wisdom of her heart has the answers. Now, how long is it going to take us for to just turn within and know that the kingdom of heaven is right there? Jesus says, seek it first. And you know what? The Aramaic word he used for kingdom, and this was his big message, the Aramaic word, that's what he spoke, the word was Malkutha. And so what he was saying is seek, and Malkutha means the sovereign counsel of God within yourself, Marie Perez. So he says, seek the sovereign counsel of the wisdom of your heart, and then everything will be added unto you. Is it that simple? Yeah. So when Raoul rings the bell, I'm going to invite you into the kingdom of heaven, whatever you want to call it. Invite you into the heart space. Invite you into the... into the vibration of the universe. Breathing in, I breathe in, and breathing out, I smile. And I say, I have arrived, I am home. I have arrived at that sacred space within myself that's always there. No matter what happens in our lives, at whatever age we identify with, that presence is always there. It never went anywhere. We might have gone and gotten distracted by life and chasing after dreams. Maybe they were other people's dreams. But now we've stopped and we're going home to the truth of our being. And we smile. It's so grateful. Einstein had to stop and go within. And he discovered that there's a love. And oftentimes we discover this love by having a relationship with other. In his case, it was his daughter. For so many of us, it might be a pet. I have a lot of seedlings that I'm growing for the garden. And I found out there was a chipmunk in the basement and he was eating my seedlings. And so I said, okay, well, there's enough to share. And it'll be a diminished crop, but that's okay. Because it's love meeting love. And so we ask ourselves, where do we experience this nurturing from the universe? We smile as we listen. It's not about giving an answer. It's about discovering and having a revelation. You know, I'm nurtured in myself when I'm kind to another person. I hear the Beatles song that says, the love you take is the love you make. And so am I making love to the moment? Am I offering this open heart to the world? In the Sufi tradition, they have a strange way of praying that I find deeply beautiful. They say, open your heart to life and know that you are part of the heart of the universe, that the divine love actually lives within all creation. So open that the divine heart within you. It's not your heart. We all share this divine heart. And invite the suffering of the planet in. Those children that might be fearful and fleeing their home country. We feel the suffering on the planet. And so we touch that suffering with compassion. We touch it with kindness. Not with a mind that wants to give them answers or awfulize with them and go down that path of ain't it awful. No. We're offering our peace. Thich Nhat Hanh's very first book was called Being Peace. It wasn't how to create peace on earth. No, he recognized that when we are the peace itself, we offer our beingness to the world. And so in this holy instant, by ringing a bell, we arrive at that place within ourselves. We'll call it the center of the universe, the axis of love within all creation. And we are all axis of love. Love flows to us, through us, from us, as us. And then we become a network of lovers. Loving what is. Embracing. Sometimes what is a struggle, is a war on the outside. And so instead of inviting the war on the outside to the inside, we become a nurturing place for that war. It's like a crying child. We don't smack it and tell it to be quiet, but we put it in our arms. And when that child is held and heard and seen and loved, well, then the crying abates. And then two hearts beat as one as we nurture what is. We smile to this moment. We fall in love with what is, not with what we want to be. That, yes, that's a whole different way of approaching life, having a vision and pursuing that vision. But right view in the Buddhist teaching is to see everything as the unfoldment of the Buddha consciousness, the awakened presence. To take refuge in the Dharma, which are the teachings of truth that awaken from within. To take refuge in a Sangha, which is spiritual community, which is not necessarily just the people in this room, but those who align with a consciousness that is operating from a field of oneness. That's my tribe, where it's not about me, it's about this greater something revealing itself, and we are all sharing that. And so when we take refuge in the Sangha, we can literally surrender into one another. We can open our hearts to each other and be held in a greater sense of belonging as we potentiate one another. When two or more are gathered in a vibration of love, the I am is there. We begin to understand what the master teacher was teaching. And so in refuge in the Sangha, we take refuge in each other. How sacred is that? And each other could be the trees and the birds and the seedlings. It's all yourself. And the last refuge that he invited us in his teachings on love to take refuge in was mindfulness. Mindfulness is a moment-to-moment practice. Mindfully sitting in this chair. Mindfully aligning your body. Mindfully opening your mind to the beginner's mind. Not the expert mind. The expert mind is full of information that's unnecessary. But the beginner's mind has curiosity and freshness and is open to discover. And you open to the beginner's heart as well, a heart that can love with equanimity. You can pick up a little bug and you feel love for it. Not that you want to stick the lightning bug in a bottle until it dies, but rather you want to see the lightning bug in action, in the trees and in the ground, knowing that they're sending a single signal to you that we're made out of light. And when you smile to that, then you realize we're made out of love. And then something alchemical begins to happen. In the class that we just finished, Awakening the World, Llewellyn spoke about the alchemy that's necessary on the planet, where we take this divine energy within ourselves and it transforms us, not into a more concretized individual self of me, but into a more dissolved sense of me into we, that we are all connected, that there's one life and we are that one life. And so then we see ourselves in everything. We inter are, as Thich Nhat Hanh would say. I am you, you are me, we are one. And when we open our heart and our mind and our awareness, and awareness is Buddha consciousness, simple awareness. Awareness precedes thought. And so when you live in an awake awareness, you are operating from the Buddha consciousness, and you smile because there's no me there wanting answers. And you have arrived again in the holy instant of now. Huh. So you're having a love affair with the universe. And the irony is the universe is you. Huh. And it's all around you. There's only one here. And so we take the net of Indra as a metaphor to close with, this beautiful net of life. And each one of us is a jewel at the intersection of those nets. And each jewel reflects every other jewel in the hologram of the one life, where we are all reflecting to each other light and love, beauty and possibility, wisdom and truth. Not to acquire any material gain, but to let go of all attachment. And to be detached, my Zen calendar this morning says, does not mean that you don't have anything. It means that you're not possessed by anything. And so when we're not possessed by the outer, we can then expand into this inner field that's out beyond the ideas of right thinking and wrong thinking, that's out beyond the idea of you and me. And when we meet in this field of divine love, we have arrived. We have arrived. So feel the presence that's as intimate as your own jugular vein, as it says in the Quran. You are so close, so connected to this love and light that it is actually what you are. And to this presence, within and all around, let's say the heart salutation together, which goes like this. I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the radiant presence of the One abiding in my heart. Resonating with ease and grace.
Freely expressing and allowing.
Always discovering and realizing. That the very thing that we're looking for, we're looking with. We take a deep breath, we exhale, we say yes, the beloved in me bows to the beloved in you, and in this place we are one. When you're ready, open your eyes. Thanks for sending in your tithes, y'all. Sign up for the classes. Jody will send you an email We have the Wednesday Night Live first week in March, and we also have the new Wednesday class in March, The Art of Living. So thank you all. Be safe. Pray for Ukraine. I love you.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org. To create a brand new world.